Radio City, John Grayson, Rob Ross here with you once again this week to talk over some of the latest about what's going on elsewhere in the world and, of course, here on PopDose.com. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, John? How are you feeling?
Not bad yet. It's been one of those weeks. We're getting old. We're falling apart. You know, it's happening to the best of us and to the worst of us, like you and me. And, you know, things are going well, though, and I'm trying to stay upright and take nourishment.
Well, it's important. You know, it's always good to have a positive spin on the mind, body, and spirit.
Exactly. Even if the sports world isn't quite going our way, a couple of days ago, the St. Louis Blues were out of the playoffs, and now the Nashville Predators are in the middle of trying to dispatch the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim, which they will be forever, by the way. I don't care what they're calling themselves this week. But not so good for you on the baseball front either, huh?
You just had to fuck with my spirit this early on, didn't you? Thanks a whole hell of a lot, Pat.
I do what really? I can for you.
Yeah, you know, giving me the warm and fuzzies. Yeah, you know, I just got done watching the Mets lose their seventh in a row.
Oof.
In 11 innings to the Arizona Diamondbacks. So the embarrassment, the shame, the atrocity that has become the Mets bullpen is phenomenal. You know, I know that they're racked with injuries.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's unfortunate. It seems it always works with them that they're snake bitten early in the season. They start off really hot right out of the gate, which they did. And then all of a sudden, everything goes wrong simultaneously. One domino falls, they all fall. And we're looking at a pretty bad stretch here, at least until, I hate to say it once again, the All-Star break, just like we have for the last 2 or 3 years. But you know what? I'm a Mets fan for life. I'm used to this shit by now. Last time we talked, you know, the Rangers were still playing hockey. And, of course, they fucked up royally, not only in Ottawa, but they came back and played the most embarrassingly lackluster game at Madison Square Garden, and they deserve to lose to the Ottawa Senators. Good job by the Senators.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see them in there against Pittsburgh. The Rangers just showed me absolutely nothing, and I've said it throughout the entire season. This particular team has no heart. There's no spirit, no vibe, and I'm really glad that the Garden crowd let them know.
Yeah,
because that was shameful. What people pay, first of all, for hockey tickets is criminal. To see them not even bother to show up and to play with so much, just so flat and no drive or desire, really, really embarrassing.
Yeah.
And they went out in six like they deserved to go. They should have gone out in less, frankly, after that disgusting loss in overtime in Ottawa. They should have lost sooner than that. But okay, they're over and done with. Hopefully there'll be a bit of retooling and maybe dismantling of a team that's shown me nothing. And I'm sorry, I'm one of the few people out there that will say Henrik Lundqvist is not the guy to lead this team to a Stanley Cup.
Nope.
First of all, he's injury-racked. He's gotten older. I don't think all of his injuries have healed. He's played some great games, but I'm sorry. I have watched him make some seriously egregious mental mistakes, and you can't put that off on the defense. As I've said many, many times, as far as the defense goes, Mark Stahl and Joe Girardi, nice guys, but they have to go. And Rick Nash has never shown me anything. What, a goal here, a goal there in the playoffs? Wow, he showed up twice in, what, five seasons with the Rangers?
Yeah.
Enough. Trade him as well. And the rest of them, Derek Stepan and Chris Kreider. Kreider showed a better streak of goal scoring, but Stepan, forget it. He wasn't even anywhere to be found. So, you know, I'm just really disgusted at the way that the Rangers did not perform. And that's the bottom line. They didn't perform. They were a better team overall than Ottawa. Ottawa just wanted it better.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. Lundqvist didn't do what he was supposed to do. End of story. Rangers, all of them, are culpable.
Right.
Fans in the world, but that team let us all down.
Yeah, and it's what he's paid a lot of money to do as well. And, you know, as far as sports weeks are concerned, mine was solidified the other day when, of all people, and we'll get much more into what's going on the political front later in this conversation, but there he was, Donald Trump giving the commencement address at Liberty University last weekend. And who does he call out? Oh, I know. Yeah, who does he call out from the crowd? My good friend Jim Kelly, son of a bitch. I mean, just there goes, you know, as if the four Super Bowl losses weren't enough. Now I got this on my head. Screw you.
Well, you know, Jim Kelly, Paul O'Neill, even though I hate the Yankees anyway, and of course Curt Schilling.
Right, so, right. Well, oh, the trifecta. That's yes. Lovely. And we have much happier tidings to talk about. There's a lot going on the musical front, and we're going to start with a couple of bands that you have profiled on PopDose.com, one of which is not even a band. It's a young lady by the name of Christina Catone. Who is she?
She is actually the lead singer of a band called Honey and the 45s, and she's stepping out for the first time with her solo debut EP called Bow. And it's a pretty upbeat and, I'd say, joyful piece to listen to. It's a really nice presentation of songs. I don't want to say classify it, but I would put it in that kind of modern funk, soul, jazz vein, with a little bit of pop mixed in. But you can tell where her influences tend to lie. You know, it's only 5 songs, but still, you know, there's this sense of joy, first and foremost. And that's the recurring theme with this EP. Considering the opening track is called Bad For Me, it's kind of a wryly ironic track. Her vocals are just really warm and embracing, but they're brassy and ballsy, which is what I really, it draws you in immediately.
Yeah.
She can sing.
Right. She sings a lot of songs that have a sweetness to them, but they don't ever get twee.
Right. She can go from that gutsy, forthright, dare I say it, commandeering lead vocalist spot to drawing it back and just being gentle and sweet. Like on Ukulele Love Song,
yep,
which is just that it's an old-fashioned kind of piece. It's really got a heartwarming vocal. It makes you feel very good, and it's touching.
Days come, nights fall. I don't wanna go. I don't wanna go. Kiss me right now. If you want me so. If you want me so.
But the melody is equally delightful. But then there's a track called BFF, which is, it's kind of a neat little piece of soulful pop, but it's got some ska rhythms in it. And the horns and guitar just really kick it all the way up. So this is one of those, sometimes, and you and I have talked about this, and I know I always say that, but we've talked about EPs in the past. And when you're introducing someone for the first time, this is the vein to go in. You know, this is where you want to introduce them.
Right.
You start them off, you give them a bit of a flavor, and then when that first full-length album comes out, the table's been already set. Like, okay, I really like that EP. Now I'm ready to listen to a full album. You know, give me more.
Yeah.
And this is what I think Christina Cattone delivers as her own performer, not being part of the band.
Right, and she also shows off herself as an instrumentalist too, which is kind of a cool thing. So want to get a hold of this one. It's called Bow. It's the new EP out from Christina Cattone, and of course you can find the words on the page and some music from it, including that ukulele love song, online at popdose.com from the pen of Rob Ross, or the keyboard, if you will. And we also have one from a band that I remember hearing a lot about, going back about 10 years, and it's been a little while since the string cheese incident has crossed my desk, but it did because of you this week. What have they been up to?
Well, they've actually been kind of on hiatus for a while. I mean, this is a band that's been around, and like you, I've heard about them for the last 20 years because they always used to play New York at a place called Wetlands,
mm-hmm,
which was where all the sort of, I hate this phrase, but where jam bands used to always play. But nevertheless, this is their first album since 2014. It's actually their 7th studio album, and it's called Believe, and it's actually a pretty nice record. You know, it's not. I would not put this in that jam band vein. That's why I don't like those words, because it automatically pigeonholes a group.
Right.
Whether or not they've done a certain style for a prolonged period of time. Okay. Having said that, one of the things that's most interesting about this record, as a change from their usual MO, they actually wrote the songs, worked them up, and recorded them before they made them part of the live set. In other words, this time they prep themselves before they go out on the road again, because they are most well known for being a stringently touring band. But the thing is, this has a lot of width to it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's soul. There's funk, there's groove, you know, there's kind of mellow, there's 70s vibe. And the thing is, there's also something that does not sound like them at all. Straightforward pop. I, you know, an aptly titled song called So Much Fun. And it's very poppy. You know, there's a song called Get Tight that has that kind of swamp boogie thing that you and I love.
Yes.
That almost, they're going to keep on chuglin' kind of vibe, you know?
Right. Well, and that's where I think a lot of that jam band label comes from with them specifically, because like you said, it really doesn't fit, but their music is very prone to improvisation. And I can see where when they take this one out on the road, they're going to have a lot of space to play with.
Right, and that what makes it even better and more interesting is hopefully they stick within the parameters of the album rather than going off in jams, because these songs, as recorded, work well enough
right.
to fill an entire set. You know, you could get at least a good show out of this band on the strength of these songs. I mean, the title track is probably, to me, the best song on the album, because it's heavy, it's soulful, it's got that 70s groove, especially on the chorus. To it, you're going to hear, I don't know why, but I kept thinking of Mr. Big Stuff.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to plump from those kinds of tracks, you're doing something right.
Yeah, and they really did in this one. The album is called Believe, and the title track is also one to check out, because they play a lot with rhythms. I would love to just see the drummer in this band work, because there's a lot of that really sort of improv jazz flavored stuff going on in that track. Check it out. It's there on the page at popdose.com from Rob Ross, and I really think you'll enjoy this one. And this is where you and I are going to get, I think, particularly effusive, because we both love good pop music. And we talked last week about the fact that the Blood Rush Hour, whose second album as a group called Who Folds First, is now out and available. And Rob, I'm going to hand it over to you, because I am just in love with this record.
Well, I don't think that it's one that you're going to hand over to me, because we both feel the same way about it. I mean, we both love this band. We love this record. God, did we love the last record. Everyone I played and then The Unthinkable Happened for flipped out over it.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully now you and I can go on and crusade with this album, because Who Folds First, I think, is, and I may be going out on a limb, but this is a personal opinion, I think this album maybe even better.
Right.
And I mean, you and I have talked about that album, the prior album, Ad Infinitum, to death, just on our own time, because we both have loved it so much. It's that good. Who Folds First is such a major leap forward and up. Now, you know, the thing about that last record, and again, it's got that wonderful emotional connection for both of us, because it's firmly rooted in 70s rock.
Yep.
There's no way around it. For good, bad, or indifferent, you know, and that's my wheelhouse as it's yours, because that's our roots. That's when we grew up and became musically conscious. You know, a lot of the same elements are still in there. You know, you're going to listen to this album, you're going to hear the multi-layered harmonies that make you think of Queen or ELO or The Move, you know, especially The Move when they get really weird and clever. You know, there's definite Roy Wood influence. You know, yep, there's definitely going to be a Big Star kind of vibe in there.
Sure.
Badfinger kind of vibes, you know, especially when they get really melodic and are more straightforward than when they do the very complex movement of songs that definitely have that kind of, yes, ELP prog rock. And, if people say, oh, well, prog is so uncool or it's a dirty word, fuck you. You have to have skill to play prog rock.
Yes.
If you can play, and you know what? If you really want to talk about complexity, I want to say that a lot of the songs on Who Folds First might have the complexity of the debut album that so many of us love, In the Court of the Crimson King, An Observation by King Crimson.
Let's cue up the next one. It's horrible then, because again we know exactly what's in store. Go back to the drawing board. And when the genius of creating is replaced by time for skating, then the forte comes up short, because I've heard it all before. It's not bad pain to compose a
is, I mean, this one comes right out of the gate, and it's got those layered harmonies in the song No More Excuses. It's the first one on the record, and you get to the end of that track, and you think, okay, what are you possibly going to hit us with next? And what they hit with next is a song called He Left the Party Far Too Soon, that I think is my favorite one on the album so far. It's certainly the one that grabbed my attention the most. But then you get later on into the album, and there's a song called Find Another Russian Dancer that is hilarious and interesting and musically weird, and I love every second of it. It takes you...
Timely too.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It just, I love the directions that this record goes into that you wouldn't necessarily expect. And yet, once you get there, you think, you know what? It's comfortable here.
Well, those tracks and the ones that I really, really love were No More Excuses, which is the first track on the album.
Right.
I mean, that starts off the proceedings with, to me, it sounded like a triple guitar attack.
Yeah.
You know, if you took Brian May's guitars and started layering them, you know, in that specific way. But then you've got, you know, the very upbeat melody. It's kind of, I don't know, maybe you picked up on it too. It sounds like Mr. Blue Sky in a lot of ways.
Yes. Yeah, and there's a lot of Jeff Lynne.
There's a song there that's no matter what, it's going to make you smile.
Yep.
You know? And that's part of it, you know, it's music to soothe the soul, you know, and bring you up. But then there's also that track Danny, because it's got that rock riff to it, and I mean rock with a capital R-O-C-K.
Yes.
And at the same time, it's got okay, yeah, you're going to probably kill me, and Robert DiStefano is probably going to kill me, but it's got that Todd Rundgren thing about it. And you know, if it's got the Rundgren vibe, I'm going to go crazy.
Right.
So it's just that good of a record. So rather than us dissecting each one of the tracks, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to simply say that the beauty of this record is if you thought you were going to get more of what you got with And Then the Unthinkable Happened, be prepared to be surprised, because
right.
This one is special. And I emphasize the word special, because what you think you're going to get, you're not. You're going to get something much more, much
right.
greater.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And again, it has that vibe about it that when you listen to this CD all the way through from beginning to end, your first thought is, there's a list that starts popping up in your head of people that you need to tell about this. And that's the hallmark of a great album. It's called Who Folds First. It's out from the Blood Rush Hour now. Get this one. And you can find more words on the page from Rob Ross at Popdos. And it's a well done second effort from the Blood Rush Hour. And all it does is make you wonder, okay, when's number three coming?
Well, probably another year. You know, don't forget, you know, let's bring up one very important point. This album was done transatlantically.
Right.
You know, Bert lives in Wales, and everybody else lives here in the United States. I think everyone else is in New Jersey. I mean, certainly I know that guitarist Peter Tomlinson is in Jersey. So, you know, a big shout out to Pete. A great man, a great writer. Just what a talent.
No doubt.
You know, so it takes time for them to construct this, or even for the guys to get over to the UK. So, you know. But patience pays, because look, we waited, you know, that album came out at the end of 2014, I believe, and we got it and fell in love with it in 2015, and it's lasted and sustained us all the way through to 2017.
Right.
We've got this new album, and it's still new, so we can digest it for a while, and the gestation period will lead us to the next record.
Yeah, and that's what it's going to be, so we'll certainly let you know about that one when it comes out, but in the meantime, you've got a lot of work to do listening into the Blood Rush Hour with their second effort, and we've got plenty more to talk about here as we get a little bit into what's going on in the political scene, and man, I mean, following the firing of James Comey, you and I had thought that that was what this conversation was going to be about, and now we have a special prosecutor. You know, it's been less than a week. It's just insane how quickly this is happening and how seriously this is being taken by a Republican Congress. That's the part about this that I think is just fascinating.
Emphasize the word finally in that, because,
yes,
you know, how many times have we gone back and forth with when? Oh, then again, everyone we know of, the pundits, everyone on the planet, when?
Yeah.
When? Well, guess what? The shit has hit the fan, finally.
Yeah.
There's no way around this one.
No, there isn't. And, you know, the fact that there is a special prosecutor and the leeway and latitude that we're going to have with Bob Mueller is something that I think all he has to do is start asking the right people the right questions, and he will. And it's not going to take very long at all for this to be an incredibly incendiary moment for the White House, for the country, for the Constitution. There's no overstating this.
Well, all we have to do is just wait and see who has to appear.
Yep.
Let's see the subpoenas start rolling out. The minute you hear the word subpoena, the dominoes are going to fall faster than we can even blink, probably, because there's no way around it. There's right. no escaping it. Any funny business, and they're going to be caught and jailed immediately. I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Well, and when you have somebody, I think the most telling thing is that the deputy attorney general that Donald Trump tried to throw under the bus, Rosenstein, and blame Comey's firing on him, it's now coming out, and again, this is less than a week later, that this guy was ready to pack his bags, say fuck everything, and get out of Washington. He's already distancing himself from Donald Trump and anybody else that he feels might be culpable in this. And when the deputy AG is taking those kinds of steps, then yeah, something massive is about to break.
The thing is, and this is the most frightening, well, first of all, there's no way around this.
Yep.
And people have hinted at it, and they, you know, people chat about it, but we're in a constitutional crisis.
Right.
End of story, full stop. But the thing is this, Trump, obviously, that's a problem. How much does Pence know? How much is Pence involved in this? His involvement would mean then he really could not, if things were to unravel the way we expect them to, he could not in good conscience take the office of the presidency.
Right.
You have the attorney general. Beauregard is definitely neck deep in this.
Yep. And, you know, that's not very deep for him because he's only this big.
Right. I mean, he's a fidget, but you know what? Fidgets drown quickly.
Right.
You know, obviously Flynn. How much is Comey involved, actually, in all of this shit? You know, where does he really lie in all of this? But nevertheless, my greatest fear in all of this is that, as we know, by law, if the president and the vice president are unable to assume their duties, then the next in line is, God forbid, the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, Paul Ryan.
If there's one motherfucker, really, you know, I hate Mitch McConnell, but you know what you're going to get with Mitch McConnell, right. Much in the way you know what you're going to get with Donald Trump. They're both shitty guys.
Right.
They're truculent, devious scumbags. But Paul Ryan is a smarmy prick.
Right. He's a spineless little shit, too. He has there's no way to tell what he's going to do at any moment because it's going to be whatever serves Paul Ryan best.
Exactly. I mean, talk about being the biggest sycophantic hypocrite that I've ever watched.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy just – and his face sucks. You know, next to Ted Cruz, Paul Ryan's got the most punchable face in America.
Right.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and I the other piece of news that came out this week, and I hesitate to even call it news, but Joe Scarborough, oh, Christ. I mean, for him to say...
Which element of Scarborough do we want to take care of? Because there's a lot to have fun with him.
The Kellyanne Conway thing, when he said after all this time that it comes out now that, you know, Kellyanne Conway would do these hits and then say to them off the air, oh, I felt like I had to go home and take a shower first. Well, you know what, Kellyanne? Here's a tip. Stop fucking lying. I mean, you know, just take the money and run and let the country go up in flames while you're at it. You horrible, horrible woman. I want them to find something on her just so I can see her in handcuffs.
Well, Joe has Mika. And, you know, Mika in more ways than one.
Yeah, yeah. Because,
you know, the two of them are a package deal. Scarborough playing the doyen and the bastion of morality.
Uh-huh.
And I'm saying that with my tongue very firmly planted in my cheek. And then Mika playing the scold. Come on, they're both showboaters and they're right. So full of shit.
Yeah.
You know, look, anything that Scarborough and Mika have to say, you take with a grain of salt. The only people worth a good goddamn on that show, and I don't care if people want to get me for this because I know they hate him, Mark fucking Halpern. He's the man.
Yeah.
Okay. John fucking Heilman. He's the man, okay? When they have him on, Mark McKinnon, he's the man. Those guys, the circus, people should be watching that if they really want to get a pulse on anything. Richard Haas, Harold Ford, Steve Rattner. Those are the only people you want to watch Morning Joe for. And I used to get a kick out of seeing Mike Allen because Mike Allen's just such a character.
Yeah.
Ever since he left Politico and has gone off with Jim Vanderhyde to run their own thing, I never see Mike Allen anymore. That really bums me out because I always enjoyed his stoic, straight-faced, if he smiled, it would break his face, you know, monotone, happy Friday. That was my the thing I look forward to the most on that show. Anything Scarborough says, like I said, take it with a grain of salt. And when Mika throws her 2 cents in, just turn the sound down. Because if it's anybody who's so full of shit, it's Mika Brzezinski.
Yeah. And I mean, to circle this back around full circle to where we started, the fact that there's a special prosecutor now. We're barely 4 months into this administration, and already there's a special counsel that's looking into presidential wrongdoing. How long before he's out? What do you think?
I was about to say, how long do I think you've just hit it. We're obviously reading each other's minds. I'm going to say it could limp along to the end of the year because it'll limp along.
Yeah.
It's not going to – as much as we would like to see the wheels of justice turn quickly and efficiently, that's not how it's going to go. How long did the Watergate investigations go on? I hate drawing the comparisons, but it's the only gauge we have.
Yeah.
In this kind of surreal realm that we've now entered.
Yeah, the interesting thing to watch is going to be, I mean, does Donald Trump's ego keep him from resigning and force him into the position of being the first president ever removed from office?
It's a good question and a fair question because, look, he himself has stated he misses his old life. Well, resign.
Yeah, go back to it.
Go back to your old life. Let Pence take the next round of hits and let's see what happens from there. That's one scenario. The second one would be because he's such an ego-driven individual, he might try and, quote, tough it out and fight it out until there is no choice and he is actually not just impeached but removed from office.
Yeah.
Unprecedented, but it can happen.
Right.
That's why we have these laws instated. And that's what people, and the press especially, keep forgetting. That's why these laws were created.
Yeah. And I mean, keep in mind, of the impeachments that we've seen, and there have only been two prior to this, the one of them ended with Andrew Johnson beating the rap by one single vote in the House of Representatives. So, I mean, anything can go on when it comes down to this, but it's certainly going to be an interesting time. And I'll tell you, legislatively, everything in the world is going to come to a halt. Nothing is going to happen because they can't focus on anything until this is done. So, yeah, it's going to be a long and slow summer and fall. But I have a feeling you're right about this. I have a feeling by the end of the year, somebody else is going to be sitting in the White House.
I hope to God it's not Paul fucking Ryan.
John Grayson, Rob Ross here with you. It is Radio City. And as we circle back to what's going on in the pop culture world, there's a bunch going on elsewhere on this website that you should be paying attention to if you're not. Not the least of which is Keith Creighton. And you and I both have had great things to say about Keith's writing in the past about music. And he's decided to step into one of the more interesting cities in the country that doesn't seem to get ever enough credit for cranking out some really fascinating music. He takes us to Minneapolis, even though he himself lives in the Pacific Northwest. What's he got for us in Minneapolis?
Well, here's the thing that I want to talk about Keith's article, because, you know, I think the world of Keith, you know, he's just a wonderful person. Yep. And a fantastic writer. He's gone into a wheelhouse that I'm familiar with. But he's talking about modern Minneapolis music, and I applaud him and I champion him for giving these bands exposure and time and due. But Minneapolis music doesn't get enough due when it comes to the truly historic bands, and that's where I'm going to spin this in a different direction. We can sit here and rhapsodize about Prince.
Sure.
Prince is certainly the most well-known of all Minneapolis area musicians. You can't count Bob Dylan. He's from Hibbing. We're talking about Minneapolis.
Yep.
Now, Prince aside, let's go to the real meat and the heart of what, to me, Minneapolis music represents. And names have to be brought out of the mothballs. And let's start with possibly the most important band of the American underground and then of the American mainstream, if you think about it in the broader context and now modern parlance, especially with this band that has received so much accolades and dare I say hero worship over the decades since they broke up, and that would be Husker Du.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, granted, Bob Mould is not a native of Minnesota. He's a New Yorker, actually, but he went to college and found in Minneapolis and founded Husker Du with local boys Grant Hart and Greg Norton. What they did was they proceeded to, first and foremost, infiltrate. This is my interpretation. They infiltrated the hardcore punk scene, not consciously. They just played this very fast, loud, aggressive, angry music. But when you listen to it, even in that speed, there's melody.
Yep.
And very quickly, they progressed into being the most melodic, most accessible, most driven band of any of the Minneapolis groups. And Husker Du's music, for many, is truly life-changing music. Even now, 30-plus years after the fact, 28 years after their breakup, they're still a viable entity when you listen to them. And they're going to get name-checked everywhere you look. You know, were it not for Husker Du, there wouldn't have been the Pixies. Without Husker Du, there wouldn't have been the Punchline. Without Husker Du, there wouldn't have been Sugar. Without Husker Du, there, you know, there wouldn't be the Foo Fighters.
Right.
You know, I jokingly refer to it, well, certainly the first time I ever heard Learn to Fly, Husker Fu. I mean, that's exactly what it was. Because, and I don't have a problem with Dave Grohl. I like and respect Dave Grohl.
Sure.
But that is a Grant Hart, Husker Du era song by the fucking numbers.
Yeah.
So right there is a key element. But Husker Du, to me, are the embodiment of Minneapolis music. Right alongside them, a band that I have to admit, I very quickly distanced myself from because I didn't like how they were with the audience, in that we paid to see them and they never played a single song all the way through because they were so drunk, drugged up, and fucked up that they were too busy farting around on stage to be bothered that there was a packed audience. There was the Replacements, and I know people love and revere the Replacements. They had some great songs. And yes, I will always give Paul Westerberg an infinite amount of respect for what he tried to do in the name of Alex Chilton and Big Star, but they fucked up, and they fucked up royally, and they lost a lot of our loyalties. And I'm sorry, you know, but still, they put out some great records, and they were as equally important to what became the American underground. You know, they are part of the fabric of that. But I have to take us back one step further than the Replacements and Husker Du for Minneapolis, because the root of all of that are the Suicide Commandos.
Yeah.
And the Suicide Commandos, who only put out one studio album in their very short lifetime, the Suicide Commandos make a record, they're back. They're back together, and they've just put out a new album. So, I mean, it's only available on vinyl right now. And the thing is, they're just as great now as they were 35, 36 years ago. Jesus, 37 years ago, maybe. 1980, 79, 78. I'm losing track.
It's got to be right.
But the fact is, you know, Steve Almas, Dave All, Chris Osgood, that triumvirate was what lit the fuse of what became such a ripe scene. You know, people forget to talk about bands like The Suburbs, you know, and Curtis A, you know. Minneapolis was or Zuzu's Pedals. You know, Minneapolis had some incredible bands. Run Westy Run was another one, I think.
Even the, you remember the Surfin' Bird?
Yeah, of course.
The Trashmen. The Trashmen were also a Minneapolis band.
So when Keith talks about, you know, modern Minneapolis music, fantastic, because we're getting back to the heart of a city that has given us so much great music. But let's take it back further in our time, talking about where does it all come from? What gave shape, gave heart, what gave direction to Minneapolis music? Prince aside, it was those bands.
Right.
But yeah. By all means, people need to read Keith's article to understand what we're talking about, because what this is a walking backwards process.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about it. And of course, I mean, you take a look at that and you feel the vibe of a city and you can kind of get some indications about where it's going to go in the future. So that's what Keith is writing about elsewhere on popdose.com. And as a matter of fact, we're going to spin back in our head segment in just a little while to another Minneapolis band that I don't think is on anybody's favorites list, but well, we'll just leave it at that for right now, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that when we get to the connection between music and great pop songs, by the way, and the movies. So more on that coming up later in this conversation. Before we get there, though, Jack Furyk has also been writing on Popdose, and he's been giving us column after column after column, one a month, and I think we're up to number five now, of his return to the stage. It's the Too Old to Rock and Roll and Too Young to Die series, and He puts up on the page this time some live music that the band that he's caught on with have produced just recently. So take us through where we go.
Well, the fact is that Jack is doing this makes me, you know, gnash my teeth. One, in complete and utter envy.
Yep.
And I mean that in the most loving way possible because, as you know, as you've heard me complain innumerable times, I am the laziest musician on the planet. You know, I can't even be bothered to pick up a guitar to work on the songs for an album that I should have started 5 years ago at this point. But the fact is that, you know, Jack's out there, he's hooked up with the band, and it was a process for him. You know, it's kind of like getting back on the bicycle, dare I say. But he's done it. And he's done it well, and he's doing it now, and you know, he's put the goods out there. So that's a key component, you know. He's put live material out there for us to see and hear.
Right.
You know, and I say no matter how you slice it, it doesn't matter how old you might be, God bless you. Go for it.
And he's doing it in exactly the right way, because what you feel, especially in this latest column, is that he and the musicians that he's hooked up with to put this band together, they're doing what they love to do. You know what I mean? You can feel it coming off the page. There's a warmth about this story that has all of the crap that we all went through in bands when we were 22, 23, 24 years old, all of that is gone now. There's no need for that. There's no time for that for anybody who's involved in this project. And they just look at each other and go, yeah, let's do that.
Well, see, that's why I say, you know, or stated as I did before about, I said it with envy, but in the best possible way, because, you know, when the Punchline got back together and I freely admit I had my hesitations and concerns because I didn't want it to turn back into that thing that it had become in my memories.
Right.
And that was twice. You know, we had been together, we broke up, we got back together, and we broke up again. And then the third go around, you know, you're older, you hope you're a lot more tempered and wiser. It started out under the best of circumstances, but very quickly, and I tried because I'm older and I like to be a bit more, what's the right word to use? Not so much diplomatic, but I wanted to give it the benefit of the doubt.
Uh-huh.
It became what I didn't want it to become.
Right.
And in this instance, for the first time, I actually stood up. One, I, you know, I was certainly old enough to have my own voice where I was going to say, this is not doing for me what I wanted to do. We're a band, but a band cannot be, let's put it this way, someone's got to be the Indians to the Cowboys.
Right.
You know? There are generals and there are majors. The guy who's doing the work, the legwork, the heavy lifting, and this is not some kind of self-aggrandizement or you know, play for more cookies or self-pity. The guy who's doing the heavy lifting, the arranging the schedules just for us to get together to rehearse, let alone record, you know, taking care of the artwork. Come on, guys, we've got to do a photo shoot. We keep putting this off. Writing the press releases in the third person, you know. The person and trying to book the gigs and make things happen, and most importantly, writing all the songs and singing the lead, that person is by default the general. And to have someone basically do what they did previously, want to talk about all the great things we were going to do, and, you know, once again taking our rightful place on the mantle of, you know, rock history. cut it off right there. You got to cut the snake's head off right there.
Right, right.
And that's what was really, really sad and painful. But, you know, look, I applaud anyone who can get back into it and play just for the sake of love.
Yeah.
Haven't had that good fortune yet. I hope it happens, and I would love to do it before I die or I become too infirm to play guitar, but or if I lose my voice or whatever the situation is. But I haven't had that experience probably since I was, let's say, 21, 22, when the Punchline first came together as the original four-piece lineup.
Yep.
Because when you're that young, the possibilities are endless and the road is open and there. When you're of this age now and you get back into it, it's for the sheer love of it. And I wouldn't mind it if it was just for the sake of, hey, let's go out and play. And then, hey, let's play for people because they might like to hear this. If we're having a good time, let's share the good time.
Yeah.
If you can keep it simple.
Yeah, there's no time for any of the bullshit. That's exactly what I was saying, yeah.
And the beauty of what Jack says is that, you know, he's doing it completely with the switch off of just the fact that he loves doing it, and he's doing it again after all this time.
Yeah, read the columns. I mean, start with the first one if you haven't yet and go through number 5, which is up for you online at popdose.com. It's Too Old to Rock and Roll, Too Young to Die from Jack Furyk. And we move from there into, you know, back into the sports world a little bit, kind of, because the Aaron Hernandez case is something that you and I, we had battered this around right in the wake of his suicide a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that we feared could happen out of this, it looks like, is happened. That his conviction, his original conviction, has been vacated. Now, the good news about that is that his daughter is going to get whatever money they can still squeeze out of the New England Patriots. Aaron Hernandez is dead. He's not going to get anything. But the fact now that there are dead bodies who will not have a name attached to them by justice is a crime in itself.
Right. And that's what I find so appalling about this, that, you know what, he's convicted and it should stand. You know, his suicide in prison was simply a smokescreen.
Yep.
He took the easy way out. And once again, you know, people may argue that we're being insensitive or I'm being insensitive or, you know, because suicide is such a serious thing. Not for somebody like this. This was a murderer.
Yeah.
He took three lives, correct?
Yep. That, okay. Well, one that he was convicted of and two that he certainly had a hand in and that his fingerprints were all over.
He took three lives.
Yep.
And he was not a good person. There's no hand-wringing here. The fact that these families have to go on without their loved ones at the hands of this person who is now not convicted, it's a travesty. And I think there needs to be a change in the legal justice system concerning something like this.
Yeah, and this is it's a curiosity of Massachusetts law. So it's the state of Massachusetts that's going to have to figure out what to do about this. But yeah, it was effectively him taking advantage of a loophole, which is even crazier about his suicide. He took his own life to take advantage of a loophole in Massachusetts law that says if you die while your case is on appeal, your conviction's vacated. How fucked up a reason is that to kill yourself?
Well, I'll tell you something. If there's any, and I'm going to use the word very loosely here, justice in any of this is, you know, now all the swirling rumors that don't seem to go away about what was his sexual preference. So if it negates him even further and it besmirches his name further, then I'm fine with that.
Yeah, good.
whatever it is that will make him look like the bad person that he truly was, I'm fine with that, because even though there is absolutely nothing wrong with homosexuality, he was a piece of shit.
Yep.
And so if you know, Mr. Macho football player with the girlfriend and the baby suddenly was found out to be actually gay, well, good. Then, you know, make fun of him, tear him to pieces. He deserves it. Nothing less.
Rob Ross, John Grayson here with you. It is Radio City. And of course, we've got a few other things to talk about. We mentioned the In Our Head segment, and mine this week comes out of that conversation we had about Minneapolis area bands, because there's one that the very first song that they had that ever got popular and was played to death on the radio is one that I couldn't stand. The song Runaway Train by Soul Asylum. I never had any use for that tune. I think the first time I heard it, I thought, oh, guy's got an interesting voice, but man, he could do something better than this with it. And I saw them live opening, I think, for Cheap Trick. Didn't even know, they weren't even on the bill, but they happened to show up that night, I guess. And they were fine, I guess, as a live act. But the one thing that I was really sad about is that the one song that they wrote that I thought was an interesting tune and it had some guts to it, it had some brains to it, was a song that, as far as I know, only ever appeared on the soundtrack to the movie So I Married an Axe Murderer, which was a terrific movie, by the way, with Mike Myers. It's a song called The Break, and the hook to the song is, "If I ever get my break, for God's sake, I'm going to make my break clean." And what a great line that is, you know? And it's a fun song to listen to, but it's one of those that, had it not been for that movie, I never would have heard. And my opinion of Soul Asylum would have been, oh, them. Except, you know, there is that one song that kind of stands out. And Rob, whether it's a song that you garnered simply because you happen to be watching a movie, hell, the first time I ever heard You're Breaking My Heart by Harry Nilsson, it was at the end of a movie called Private School with Phoebe Cates back in like 1981. But there are those, you know, they come your way and you think, wow, there's somebody I really need to investigate further. Or a song that just is, you know, either makes or breaks a band for you.
Well, it's funny. One, you just mentioned Soul Asylum. The first time I ever heard their name, they opened up for Husker Du on the Winter 86 tour.
There you go, the Minneapolis Connection.
The album that they had just released, I think it was called Made to Be Broken, which was on Twin Tone, was produced by, I think it was produced by Bob Mould and Grant Hart, or Steve Feelstead and Grant Hart, or Bob Mould. It was one of those permutations, yeah. But it was them, and they opened up for Husker Du. They were actually quite good. Not particularly memorable. They were just good. You know, yeah. They were a good band. It fit. It really fit the texture. The next time I heard them was Runaway Train. I couldn't stand it. The one song by them that I actually thought was catchy, because I really disliked that Misery Incorporated song. The song with the Clerks.
Yes.
Or Clerks 2, maybe. It's one of those movies. Anyway, was a song that, of all things, Claire Danes was in the video, where she's this misfit girl, and at the end it turns out she's an angel.
Okay.
The song was called Just Like Anyone. It was just a really catchy song, but Soul Asylum for me never really, really got my interest. Now, in terms of a movie, I will tell you a couple of ones. When I saw Athens, GA Inside Out in the theater, in fact, it was Memorial Day 1987, so it was 30 years ago. We first saw it at a midnight showing, and because it was about bands anyway, and the bands were all, you know, in live sequences, there was this one band called the Kilkenny Cats, and the song was just so good that I had to have it. The problem was that song wasn't on the soundtrack album. Room 101. I believe that Omnivore, the good folks at Omnivore, when they reissued the soundtrack, gave all the performances that were missed out on the album. You know, which
nice.
The album only had one performance per band. But that was definitely one case. Actually, there were a lot of, you know, bands and songs on that album that were key for me. In fact, my real love for Love Tractor took hold. Not just the opening theme song, if you will, Fun to Be Happy, but the track that they did live was a song called Pretty. It's just this really wonderfully hypnotic piece. And, you know, that made me go out and buy Around the Bend almost the next day. The same thing could actually be said for Dreams So Real. The song called, it's either called Golden or Steps. I always thought it was called Golden because that's like the key word in the song.
But yeah.
That was a great song. And unfortunately, the albums that I heard afterwards just never matched up to the power of that one song.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, it captured a certain time and essence with those bands. You know, hey, one great song, not great albums, C'est la vie.
Right.
Yeah. Having said that, watching Big Star, Nothing Can Hurt Me, I heard songs in there that I'd never heard before. What I did was the smart thing. I froze the credits when I finally had it at home to find out, what are these songs? Who are these performers? And I got basically everything that I heard that wasn't Big Star. There was a song called I Tell No Lies. I want to say the band was called The Avengers. I have the single. but my memory just doesn't serve me. That was just, it was the epitome of garage rock circa 65, 66, you know, with the Vox Continental organ, just so catchy. There was a track called Batarang that I just thought, okay, I gotta have. It was basically all the Memphis bands that were wound up being on the original Ardent label, because okay. they all played with one another, whether it was, you know, Jim Dickinson or Terry Manning were in these bands with each other under different monikers, you know, Lawson and Four More. Cargo was a band on Ardent, and, you know, or Looked at the Sun by the Hot Dogs, who were also on Ardent when Big Star were on as well. Just some phenomenal stuff in there. And then, of course, the one track that really freaked me out was this ballsy rock and roll track called Think It's Time to Say Goodbye. And it turned out it was Rock City. And if you don't know who Rock City was, it's Big Star without Alex Chilton.
Yeah.
The last permutation of the band right before Alex joined, because I wound up tracking down the song and found it on a compilation album from Lucky Seven Records, which I believe was Terry Manning's reissue label, I believe. And it's on there, along with the first run through of Feel and Try Again, which do not sound all that dissimilar to the versions that can be found on Number One Record.
That's cool. Yeah, and you know, with me, I'll leave you with a couple more, because I was watching a movie one night in which Vince Vaughn plays a very twisted serial killer, and Joaquin Phoenix and Jenny Garofalo are both in it. I think Jenny plays a cop, and Joaquin Phoenix plays the guy that that Vince Vaughn is trying to hang all his murders on. The movie's called Clay Pigeons, and there's a scene in there where they walk into a bar room, and what's playing on the jukebox but Wanted by the Refreshments? And I thought, holy shit, somebody finally put Roger Klein's music into a movie. That was one, and the other one that I will take with me to my grave is the first time I ever sat there and watched Repo Man all the way through and heard Pablo Picasso Was Never Called an Asshole. And I thought, that may be the best song ever written.
Yeah, but you know, Repo Man also has that one shining moment of having the Circle Jerks doing When the Shit Hits the Fan acoustic.
Yes.
That's priceless.
One of the best soundtracks ever. Well, we're going to, I guess, leave it at that, because we've got a whole bunch more to talk about next week. And good God, who knows what's going to go on in Washington, D.C. over the next 7 days. Anything else you want to leave the folks with, Rob?
Well, I'm going to give you a teaser, because I'm going to show it to you right now. In my hand is the new album from Paul Weller.
Excellent.
Mind Revolution. Now, what's going to be neat about this is we're going to talk about this album, but also the album that just came out prior to it, because not many people know it. It's a soundtrack album. This is Paul Weller's first soundtrack score. It's called Jawbone. It's about a boxer, a subject that's very near and dear to Weller's heart. I'll get into it next week, but we've got not one but two new albums from Weller. These are both, so far, UK-only releases, coming to us from the good folks at Parlophone Warner Brothers. That's right, you heard me. Parlophone Warner Brothers. That's not a mistake. Parlophone Records, the home of the Beatles. Parlophone EMI. EMI no longer exists. So by sheer dint of the use, the European Union allowing the carving up of EMI to take place between Universal Music Group and then the bulk of it going to Warner Music Group, Warner walked away with the Parlophone catalog, except the Beatles, of course.
All right.
But we're talking about the current catalog, of which Paul Weller is part of, Blur are part of. However, they also got the Pink Floyd catalog, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, but that's me just label geeking, just to give you a history lesson. So we have two albums from Paul Weller to discuss, and a whole lot more of really great music and great pieces that are up on Popdose now, which I'm sure, as John always does, I will implore you to go and read and watch and listen to and absorb and take in, because you don't know what you're missing. Yes, Radio City is magnificent, but so is everything else on Pop Dose.
There you go. So go check it out, and there's added content all over the place. Rob Ross, thank you again, sir, and we will talk some more next week. Be here for it on Radio City.